UK. Quick editor's note. Unfortunately, our Jaws review was lost, thanks to the piece of shit that is Audacity. So we'll record that at a later date. Also, in the Alien review, I give James Cameron a bit too much credit for using miniatures and creating strong female characters when clearly Ridley Scott did it first in Alien. So my bad, even though we do mention Ridley Scott quite a bit in it, I also talk about James Cameron, which didn't come along until the sequel. Enjoy the episode.
Big Horror and Little Podcast is a proud member
of the Legion Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Big Horror in Little Podcast. We're here with our award-winning guest, Mr. Adrian Kazas.
Good evening.
Last time he appeared on the show, we made the most downloaded show, and we're hoping that he's a little twinkle and he's back to spread some light with us for the 70s theme, part two.
Yep.
Do you want to...
Yeah, so part two of our 70s show. Today we're going to be talking about The Omen, which was your pick.
That was my choice.
Wasn't it? Obviously, we've got a 10 Club coming up as well, and all that sounds good. And then we're going to talk about Alien as well. It's going to be our...
It's film number four of the 70s. It's three and four today.
Yeah. So, obviously, we picked films that kind of are a bit lesser well-known, I think. But there's so many to choose from in the 70s, and I think we deliberately didn't pick really obvious stuff. Because there is some obvious ones: Texas Chainsaw,
Exorcist,
Dawn of the Dead, Halloween. So we've kind of gone a bit obscure. I think we're a bit more mainstream, obviously, this episode. Let's just briefly talk, because when we last had you on, we think we told you about The Conjuring and Insidious and some of the newer ones.
Yeah, that's right.
That you hadn't seen. Did you watch those, and what did you think?
Watched most of them, yeah. Conjuring, really enjoyed. Conjuring was a film that I got very nearly all the way through thinking, wow, this is a fantastic modern horror film.
Yep.
And then the last 20 minutes kind of spoil it for me.
Okay.
The big MTV ending.
Right.
And now everyone's happy at the end.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because, as I say, it was really well put together. I thought that they created really good suspense within the film, and it was fresher than anything I've seen for a long time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was just the ending that disappointed. We've since gone on from them. I've watched a couple more, like we've watched the Annabelle, the follow-up to that. Awful.
Yeah. Film.
My wife has a penchant for crappy horror films, so she enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't really get on with that at all.
See, I'm a sucker for anything with a doll in it. I loved Child's Play. It was probably one of the first films I was a bit obsessed with as a kid. Dolls, you know, the Stuart Gordon one. Yeah. I used to like the Puppet Master films.
Puppet Master, I remember.
Yeah, so for me, like anything with a doll in, I immediately think, oh, that might be good. And it wasn't really, because the doll wasn't alive, was it?
No.
And I think I expected it to be kind of running around and stuff. And they even did a thing where they teased a shot on the doll, like it was going to move, and it never did. Even at the end, when you think, oh, they're going to do it now, they're going to make it wink or something. Nothing.
Nothing at all. I think the thing I found most annoying about that film was the fact that it was a very simple premise of all the way through the film you could tell at some point that kid's going to get into that room. And you know, they kept wandering around leaving the door open.
Predictable.
It's very, very predictable. And if that is your job and you collect all these weird and wonderful and dangerous objects, you'd certainly make sure your kids can't wander around the house and get in there. It was quite disappointing.
A lot of missed opportunities in that film as well.
Yeah, very much.
Say around the doll where it could have done something more that was going to make you jump and just never happened. I think I gave it about a 5. I think you gave it about a 4.
Possibly a 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't enjoy that one at all.
Have you seen anything else recently worth mentioning?
Not a grab. I've been watching a lot of series recently. So
we've
not watched that many films. A lot of my film watching, apart from swatting for today, I've been watching a lot of the newer films with the Oscar season just passed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Watched most of the Best Picture nomination.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool.
Some very, very good films. The standout one for me, I think, was Imitation Game.
Oh, yeah.
I think Cumberbatch was very, very unlucky to be up against Eddie Redmayne. Right. I think he deserves something for his performance. It was brilliant.
Okay.
Cumberbatch is at the cathedral tomorrow because he's distantly related to Richard III.
Is he really?
Yeah. I actually told him to go and have a look at him.
Yeah,
yeah, hi.
So we have not seen that, so that's what.
Yeah, very good. Highly recommended. I'll give it an 8 or a 9, definitely. It's
really?
A wonderful film, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Good. We'll watch that then.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to go into your pick first.
Yeah,
yeah, and obviously, I thought you could take the lead on it, really.
Yeah, well, it's one of the films that I watched very early in my horror film watching career. Nightmare on Elm Street was one of the first horrors I ever watched. But Omen is one that stuck with me, obviously. I think even now, re-watching it to come here and talk about it, I think the thing that stands out for me is it's got some of the best horror slash comedy deaths in any film.
Yeah.
The obvious one that stands out is the photographer with the pane of glass getting decapitated. I mean, that is still holds up as one of the all-time
classic horror
deaths.
I think it's probably the number one decapitation.
It's got to be up. It's got to be up there, definitely. Mm. But there's so many. I mean, there's the Father Brennan getting speared by the lightning conductor, and then of course you've got the right at the beginning of the film, the nanny hanging herself.
See,
jumping out of the window.
We said this last night. That's 13 minutes in.
Really?
Right near the start.
Which is something really major and quite disturbing happening.
Yeah.
Almost like just after the credits.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more disturbing. The fact, I mean, I doubt they filmed it in front of a load of kids, but the fact that it's in that setting, you've got the big party, and there's so many people around, and it's just, and it is so public, you know, you can hear her, you see the kids going around on the carousel, and you can already hear her shouting.
Yeah,
you can
hear
Damien, and you know it's building to something.
Yeah,
and then it's so sudden. It's
very creepy the way she says it as well.
It is, and it's this is for you, Damien, and then goes and
she's almost serene face.
Yeah, yeah,
the
very much so. She sees the dog and then disappears, and you don't really understand what's happening with the dog there, with it being right at the beginning of the film. But yeah, it's quite brutal and shocking, as you say, for something that's so early in the film.
Mm.
And yeah, sets a good standard for the rest of it.
Yeah,
it's awesome. For me, there's so many standout images in this film. Like, there's bits, I don't think I'd watched it probably for about 15 years, maybe longer, when I watched it for like a couple of months ago with Rach. And there's so many scenes, like when he goes to the church and like flips out, then he goes to the zoo.
I actually think that's one of the most scary
scenes.
No, where he flips out going to the church. Mm. That's like one of the actual scariest scenes in the film.
And your own mum like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, the young kid is, he's quite freaky in himself.
He is,
You know, they really sort of cast him well for someone who's so young as well.
Yeah.
I mean, in all the scenes where, you know, he has to be reasonably scary, he is actually really scary. He's actually really scary because, you know, with child actors can be very, very hit and miss.
Yeah.
And no, they did really.
One of the
really
Bulger murders and looks a bit like an older version of him. You know,
Really, very much so.
The leader one.
Yeah,
so,
he does. Yeah, Venables, really.
Yeah, I almost think that he really does look something evil about the casting of this kid.
Yeah,
well, they obviously spotted something in him, they say, because it's certainly that scene in the car leading up to the cathedral, and the scene where he's, where he knocks his mother off the banister as well, where he's on his little try. I mean, you see him tearing around the room, And you've got the nanny there with him, Mrs. Baylock.
Yeah.
And you see her go and open the door and he's off on his way.
Yeah.
And yeah, the look on his face is just really, really quite disturbing.
Yeah. I get fascinated with kids because I always wonder how they really get the kids to act. Because it's hard to explain to the kid because the kid doesn't get to see the film.
No.
Probably not.
No.
So yeah, I always think, you know, how do they, what's the motivation to explain to a child? I suppose it's just, you're probably easier to explain to a kid than an older kid because it's just make believe, isn't it? We're just
make it all up,
just pretending.
Yeah,
I don't think the kid would have grasped you playing the son of Satan.
That's what I mean. How do you explain that to a child?
No, because I mean, there's a lot of the script. I mean, obviously, it sort of it pushes the story. A lot of you've got the reading from Revelations and all the various different predictions, and that pushes the story along quite a bit. And as you say, the child would obviously have no understanding of that.
Mm.
But again, when we spoke last time, when we were talking about Lords of Salem, it must have been, I mean, 1976 when the film came out, so it's nearly 40 years old, and it still holds up, I think, as it's a scary film.
Yeah.
If you've never seen it, it's, there are lots of sort of disturbing scenes in it, but it keeps the suspense all the way through, because I was re-watching it and thinking, oh, well, I know what's happening, and, you know, I'd probably find it a little bit boring to actually watch it from start to finish, but was really gripped by it and still really enjoy the film.
I think it's a really well-crafted story, and the thing I really remember as a kid, apart from her hanging herself, that disturbed me a bit when I first watched it as a kid, is the idea of in a photo there's something that's getting closer to you, and in the next photo that thing's a bit closer.
Yeah.
You don't really know why, and then in the next photo it's touching him, and then that kind of signifies that he's about to get skewered.
That's right, yeah.
And then the photographer has a photo taken of himself, there's something getting closer to him.
Reflected in the mirror,
brilliant. Like just that thing where if you've never seen this film before, you kind of think,
and again, that's something which has stuck with people because it's something that's sort of been drafted into a lot of the modern films. It might be The Conjuring or another one of the modern ones where every photograph of the child, you've got the old lady in the background.
Getting a bit close to that in Insidious.
Insidious, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's obviously something that, you know, people have spotted and it has worked and they've sort of dragged on and carried on with it.
I mean, there's loads of things that have now would be considered a cliche in this film that's been used, stolen from this film, I think, and used so many times. Like the animal thing is a great one. Animals reacting to like the evil presence. And that thing in the zoo, the bit in the zoo is brilliant, I think.
Yeah, it's done really well. It's done really well. And one when I was reading up some sort of random movie facts about it, one thing I did spot in there was that throughout the film, it never actually dates it. Mm. It doesn't tell you when it doesn't tell you it's the 70s or whatever it is. And the only thing that gives it away is actually in the scene at the safari park where you can see the tax disc on the car. Mm. And that's the only thing that actually dates it, because I think they specifically tried not to, because you've got the 6 a.m. on the 6th.
Yeah,
and
of course, they
tried to not make it dated, so it didn't sort of throw that off on a tangent.
Mm. That makes sense.
I mean, that's another great scene as well, where they go and uncover the body or the sort of supposed
the
to
graveyard with the dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really, really
get out there, get out.
Yeah, it's a really grim
get
scene.
On that fence.
And and obviously you find out there as well that their child was murdered and didn't just die at birth, and so it's all a bit of a setup.
Plan, because I really like the kind of dynamic or the relationship between him and the photographer, almost like they're allies. And I know the photographer's doing it because he has to get to the bottom of this, because whatever it is in that photo,
he's aware something's going to happen.
So he's kind of helping for selfish reasons, but I kind of like the fact, because if he tried to get anyone else on board, I mean, the only person that was on board with it is the priest, and he's already dead.
People think you're mental.
Yeah, so I mean, the poor Gregory Peck's character is kind of on his own, so I kind of feel for him, and I like the fact that he's got this ally that's, you know, he's on board, totally on board with what's happening. You know, he's kind of done the research and stuff. Gregory Peck, for me, this is the only thing that ages the film a little bit for me. I think it is a timeless film, like, apart from the fact that it's obviously 70s, because they've got like Damon in a little suit.
Yeah.
He just looks like a little page boy in a little flare suit. But the only other thing that vates it is Gregory Peck's acting. Towards the end, he's a bit too Gregory Peck. And I know he's kind of renowned for that.
Yeah, yeah, I can tell you that.
But he's Gregory Peckisms, and I've got the knives.
Yeah, see, it's really into it.
But then I one point, so that actually I'm not sure if this really adds to the drama of this film.
It does, and that's obviously what he's trying to do, isn't it? He's being dramatic. Yeah. But I think it's because I've seen the episode of Family Guy where they take the piss out of Gregory Peck, and they've got a Gregory Peck dad and three Gregory Peck kids.
Oh, I'll smack you with my ring hand. Yeah. I'm aware of that.
Stop breathing on the wind. And I think it's because I'd seen that, when I then see Gregory Peck being incredibly Gregory Peck-like, it just makes me laugh, because he is great. I mean, he's brilliant. I was saying to Rachel, the original Cape Fear, Nick Nolte's character.
He was in both, wasn't he? He had a cameo, in the new one as well.
And, he's like the poor guy who's being victimised in the original, and he's great in that, and he is great in this, and I think like that's really my only criticism of the film, and if that's all I can fault it, to be honest, that's just not that really.
The acting was perhaps a little bit more dramatic in the 70s.
But people did talk like that, and I prefer the way people talk in the 70s, because I don't like the way people talk in modern films now. I like the politeness and everything of the 70s.
Right,
I like the feel of that. So I'm not going to criticise it too much. It just does make me laugh because it's
great. I think, that South Park can ruin a lot of things for a lot of people.
It can do,
Family Guy. Well, I'm sure South Park probably took the piss out of it as well.
Was it Family Guy? Yeah, I've not seen it.
No, I'll show you that clip. I'll probably play that clip during this episode. I'll splice it.
Are we there yet?
It's crowded back here.
Stop touching me.
Your leg is rubbing up against mine.
Hey, quiet down or I'm pulling over.
Stop breathing on the window.
You idiot. That's condensation. It's on the outside.
That's it. I will come back there, and so help me God, I will hit you with my ring hand.
But he's another one of that generation of actors, though, isn't he? And, and he's appeared in... I mean, I was actually surprised at sort of how few... I thought he'd appeared in a lot more that I would know.
Yeah.
But he's appeared in a lot of the good old war films, he's in Cruel Sea, and he's in Guns of Navarone, and things like that. So, he's one of these who just turn up occasionally in these films that's got everyone in. Mm. Like, surprised he's not in The Longest Day because everybody else is in that. Even Connery turns up in that one, I think.
Yeah.
He's a proper actor.
Yeah, proper actor.
That's the thing. They are a real dying breed, these actors, these kind of classic actors.
Yeah, it was towards the end of his career as well, The Omen. I mean, he did more after it, but they were surprised because he took a massive pay cut to do the film.
Did he
obviously sort of believed in the project.
Yeah.
And it ended up being his highest grossing film.
Did it?
Yeah. Okay. So it's one of those, he must have read the script and spoken to the director and sort of got really behind it to take the pay cut and go and actually, sort of throw himself into it.
Mm.
And while he gets a bit Gregory Peck towards the end, he's good in the film.
He's solid.
It's a really good performance.
Yeah, it's very believable. Mm. And I think I was saying to you before that, I've not seen this film, which is a real sin. Sorry, listeners. But I've not seen it until 3 months ago. And obviously, again, I watched it last night. Watched it the first time, I absorbed the more feel of it, but last night I kind of looked at the structure more, and I think for me it was the pacing of the film. Like, literally something happened every 5 to 10 minutes.
Keep considering it's a 2-hour movie as well, which
it's quite relentless in that sense. Mm. And everything that you want in a horror, really. Because for me, a good horror has a lot of stuff happening in it. Mm. We've got far too many films now where you're waiting.
You're waiting.
And when it does, it's not that great.
Yeah, it tells a story, and everything it does is as sharp as the last thing.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
It's like peak.
Pulls you along with the story.
And then obviously you've got that, the grasp of the investigation of what's happening. And obviously I put that picture up that moment where he realises like my son's bees are six of the six. I really, really like it.
But it's a good selection of actors all around, really, because you've got Billy Whitelaw in there as well, who's obviously in various films and TV programmes and
is he the
the nanny, Mrs. Baylock. She plays
let's talk about her.
She plays the mother of the Krays in the Krays film with Gary and Martin Kemp. Not watched that for a long time. She's quite a few things. I mean, she turns up in Hot Fuzz as well. She's one of the ladies in the village in Hot Fuzz. You've got Doctor Who. One of the old Doctor Who's played Father Brennan.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's a good selection of actors, and everyone sort of plays the part really well. I think the only sort of random one is Gregory Peck's wife. She didn't make that many films.
No.
And she's she's all right. She, you know, sort of plays the part.
She does the job that she kind of
It's interesting with her having that first half, she's just, there's nothing wrong. Very quickly, she becomes very fearful, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's the one who sort of picks up on it at first, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm.
But,
she's
no,
almost the one in denial at first as well.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my son, he's fine.
Well, she keeps thinking there's something wrong with her, doesn't she? And she's asking him to go to a psychiatrist, and she thinks that she's projecting these things on the child, and and it's not long after that you start realising, no, actually, he's a little bastard.
I think looking at this, obviously, as a father, this film is the kind of worst nightmare kind of thing, isn't it? You get your kid and it turns out to be...
Yeah, it's not what you want, is it, really?
When you look at it as a general tone, it's pretty damn horrific, really.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the later films... I've watched them. I've certainly watched Omen 2 a few times, but it's one of the series that I've never really followed on. But the first one has always stuck with me. I can always go back to it and watch. So.
Yeah, I was just going to come on to the sequels. I've seen all of them. It's never anything I particularly think, I'm going to go and watch the Omen 2. I mean, the Omen 2, I think, is about 10 in school.
Yeah.
And it's just a series of him doing making things happen to people, basically, isn't it? And then the third one is Sam Neill playing Damien.
That's right, yeah.
And I think he just kind of becomes president and takes over the world, which is probably what the devil would do.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of run of the story in the first one, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's all over the world.
he was the ambassador to Britain, and then eventually he had aspirations of becoming president.
And then the fourth one is just a really random... It's like, I think it's meant to be Damien's... He had a daughter.
Right, okay.
You never know about.
I don't think I've ever seen four.
Haven't you? No. So, conveniently, there is a daughter, just so they can do a number four, basically. And it's a female... It's a girl. I think she's early teens, maybe, 12, 13 in it. Just wreaking havoc, and I can't really remember anything apart from that.
I've seen that.
Probably have.
So just a normal 13-year-old girl.
Probably only
2 years. Yeah, so you never know. It's the perfect way to hide.
Disguise.
Yeah. But the remake. Have you seen the remake?
I have not. Okay. I have purposefully avoided it. There's a few of the newer ones that I have purposefully avoided.
Yeah.
Like the Wicker Man. You don't mess with certain things. So.
One thing's making a remake, another thing's putting Wild Man Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
With a strange wig that he always seems to have a different one in every movie, doesn't he?
He does.
He's got the worst hair of any actor.
Well, again, Nicolas Cage is one of those for me, a few people disagree, but I've never really
been honest,
that mad on him.
Apart from Con Air.
That tends to be the one. That
I don't
one
really know what else he's been in that's particularly that I think he's... I mean, The Rock is a good film.
The Rock is okay.
But it's not,
Face Off.
Not good because of Nicolas Cage. It's a good film, you know. Yeah, I mean, Face Off's a good film.
Yeah, of course. And Face Off is one of those. It's so awful. It's a good watch. It's enjoyable to sit and have a couple of hours at. Yeah, very much so.
But there's an amazing montage that I'll get up for you, and I'll show you in a bit on YouTube, with Nicolas Cage, just his crazy bits in The Wicker Man, and he just punches women. But it's so bizarre, because the tone of the original Wicker Man, it's got this very particular tone about it, it's a very serious film. Wicker Man almost seems like it's just having a bit of a laugh, and he just if a woman says something that he's not happy with, he just lamps a woman, and then half an hour later it'll happen again, and he'll just smack someone else, and he just goes around punching women. It just doesn't fit with the movie.
No,
why is he doing that? And then at the end, you think he's got a bee allergy. So they just stick this weird hat on him with loads of bees in it that's stinging.
I've just watched the best bits of it, and that's enough.
But it's almost like one of them films, it's so bad it's amusing to watch it.
Right,
you're laughing at how bad it is. But yeah, the sequel to the remake of The Omen, it came out on the 6th of the 6th, 2006.
Okay.
Obviously as a big promotional thing. And I think it kind of got slated. But there's nothing wrong with it, It's a pretty good film. It's really faithful to the original. There's some differences. Liv Schreiber is the dad and does a really solid job of being the dad. You know, I think if you literally just went and watched the 2006 Omen, you'd think it was a great film.
Right.
It's obviously just not as good as the one from the 70s, but
it's
a pretty, it's not a bad remake at all. It's a pretty faithful remake. I don't think it's a necessary remake.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say
there's not many that are they really?
No, I've
come across a few photos, and they seem to have cast Damien quite well again. He looks like a creepy little boy.
Yeah, apparently he was a proper little shit.
Excellent.
In the auditions,
right?
He was a right little bastard, and they just went, "Yeah, brilliant."
Yeah, that'll be you.
Yeah, we'll dye your hair. Cause I think he was blonde kid, and they said, "Oh, we can't really use him because he's blonde." And they just went, "No, fuck it. He's perfect for this role. Dye his hair. We've got our Damien."
Excellent.
But yeah, it's not amazing. What I remember is from a kid, because I think my first kind of thing, introduction to death as a kid, was watching King Kong.
Oh, right, okay.
From the 30s, King Kong falling off the building, and I couldn't believe he was dead. It's like, yeah. I can't... What do you mean he's dead? Like, I couldn't get my head around that as a kid. I think it was like, that was my first almost experience of seeing like death and the concept that, oh, he's gone. He's like, he's not coming back. And I think in The Omen, I expected him to totally kill Damien.
Yeah.
Because I was almost expecting like the happy ending.
Yeah, well, he sort of holds out on it, doesn't he, for a long while through the film.
Yeah. What a fucking difficult thing just to
like,
have to do.
Yeah, know, and like, it's like, no, I can't do that. He's a little boy. A kid, yeah. And it's only right towards the last sort of 15, 20 minutes of the film where he actually goes for it, and then obviously you get the old super police coming in at the end and something like that. But,
I like what the ending's, what's great about it really as well, that ending.
The 70s is an era that wasn't afraid to do a fuck you to the audience ending.
No, absolutely.
The grim endings were quite popular in the 70s, and then I think they died out in the 80s. And now when there's like a grim ending to something, it polarises people, I think. Like, I really like it.
It can do.
Because I'm expecting a happy ending.
Really?
Because everybody is. It's that Hollywood thing now that everyone's like, my dad, if it's not got a happy ending, and he knows it's probably not, he won't watch the film. He'll be really disappointed if like...
My mum can feel a bit like that too.
Yeah, like my dad...
Again, this comes in with the modern horror films. Yeah. For me, that's what spoils them.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everyone doesn't walk off into the sunset hand in hand and everything's all rosy. It's... again, as we spoke about last time, that's not real life. It doesn't work out like that.
No, it's not. And I think for me, like, I'm expecting it to be a happy ending. So I think you need to watch so many films. We get to the point where you want something different from the norm. Like, I was just talking before we started recording about I Saw the Devil and a lot of these like Korean films, the endings that they have, like, you don't see them coming because it's stuff you've never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, like the ending of Old Boy, and they dumb it down for Western audiences for some reason. I don't think, like, you know, for whatever reason they do that. Like, I don't think the remake of Old Boy would have been a good film anyway, but the fact that they totally dumbed down the ending for American audiences, I just think, come on, like, you've got to give people a bit more credit. People can handle some gritty stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to think on the other side of it as well that, you know, these films have become popular and famous in their own country for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, because of the story and because of how it pans out. And,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of the sort of remakes, certainly of like the Japanese horror films like Ring and things like that, Dark Water is another one.
Yeah.
The originals just far outweigh the remakes, and it seems pointless to even do them.
Yeah.
I
mean, Dark Water is one I really enjoyed. Again, not one I've seen for a long time, but I remember really enjoying it. And then the remake came out, and well, you know, you give it a look, and it's just like, no.
I've not watched the remake.
There's no point. It's like, is it Ring? That Buffy did, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, The Grudge.
The Grudge, that's the one. Yeah, but the original ones, the Japanese ones, are fucking gruesome. They're really quite horrible.
Mm.
And I just don't see the need in remaking them. It's I think it spoils it a little bit.
But it is just because people just don't want to read subtitles.
Yeah.
They just don't want to do it, do they? And we've
lazy culture,
maybe. Yeah, my wife's not one for subtitles at all. She won't entertain the idea.
I've said it before on previous podcasts. I understand why people don't like subtitled films, but I think you're so missing out by writing them off and just saying, I'm not watching a subtitled film. I just think I could reel off 10 amazing foreign movies that you just, it's almost like you've got to see these films.
I feel like you get a book and a film in one sometimes with a subtitle film.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm reading it and watching it, and it's a different experience.
Yeah.
I like
you've got the dubbed versions. Because
oh god!
On a lot of the DVDs and Blu-rays, you can press a button on your remote control and it will flick to the dubbed version.
Right. Okay.
And I sometimes flick to it just for a laugh. And they sound like video game actors who can't really emote. There's no proper emotion there. It's just like it's a foreign person who can who obviously knows English and is talking in their best English accent, but with no emotion and no gravity. Like they can't add anything to it. It's bizarre. Like,
take that knife out of my daughter.
Is stuff like that. Like Ichi the Killer is one where you've got. I mean, the angry Japanese voice is brilliant, isn't it? It's really aggressive and. When you flick that to English, the anger's all disappeared, and he's just saying the words, and it's just like, oh god, talk about fucking ruining a film! Like if you, yeah, bad dubbing is something we've come across a lot actually doing the video nasties. A lot of these films that were made in Italy, even though the actors are speaking English, they still overdub them.
Right. Okay.
So they are. So their lips are saying what they're. What you can hear, but it's slightly out of sync. Like it's not quite right.
And they had westerns as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always dreadful.
Well off tangent.
Yeah, so
let's pull it back to the Omen then.
Maybe back to scoring it.
Yeah, should we? Yeah, let's give it a score.
Yeah, well, as a film that I still think holds up today, as I say, I thought I might score it a little bit lower. It is one of my personal favourites, but I would probably rank it a good 8 plus. Okay. Definitely.
Cool.
9 from me.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 9.
Yeah.
As well. It's great. It's one of them films, like, after watching it being a young kid, it's not really lost any of its power to me. And I just appreciate it more because as a kid, I think I just remember like, oh god, the woman got hung, and then like the guy got his head chopped off by a piece of glass. But now, as an adult, I totally appreciate the crafted story and the brilliant acting and the great, you know, and the whole kind of drama and the tension and everything.
Yeah, it's still very well put together.
Because a lot of films you watch as a kid, they don't hold up. You watch them again as an adult and you think, shit, I wish I hadn't have bothered. I wish I'd have kept it in my memory.
Yeah.
It's an amazing film that I loved as a kid. But for me, it's even better now as an adult. So, yeah, it's a 9 for me.
I'm kind of glad I've not watched it before because, again, it's nice to have stuff like this to discover.
Yeah, definitely, well. Yeah.
Especially with modern horror being so up and down. Come back to the classics. Because we watched Rosemary's Baby for the first time.
Right. I haven't seen that.
I have seen it, but not for a long time.
Mm. And yeah,
it's, really, Mia Farrow, isn't
it? Yeah, really struck with that as well. I thought it was really small.
Mm.
Yeah, again, really gruesome parts in it. But I suppose if I watched it again now, it might look a little bit sort of all smoke and strings, but I seem to remember it being quite shocking the first time I watched
definitely
it. I think I was,
yeah,
I think I was quite young.
Because I'd never seen it before, I didn't look back at it thinking, oh, this probably would have been good 20 years ago.
Yeah, we saw 1969. I don't know why we think that, because we watched 1951 House of Wax, which is brilliant.
Yeah, Psycho from 60. Yeah. It's an incredible film. So, yeah, it's sometimes you do judge stuff.
Sometimes
you
find yourself thinking that, and you think, well, that's not real. Why am I thinking that?
Yeah, but it is
it, and it's brilliant.
I think it's a rare film that can be 50 years old and totally hold up to today's standards.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rosemary's Baby is one of them, and The Omen's another one.
Yeah. Cool. Next up's The Ten Club.
Yeah.
And we're doing Jaws because we believe it's worthy of the 10 out of 10.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Do you agree?
100%.
Oh, it's in The Ten Club then. Because we were saying if me and Rachel don't agree that it's a 10, it doesn't make The Ten Club.
Fair enough.
It's got to be kind of a unanimous decision.
Yeah.
So, yeah, is there anything you want to say about Jaws?
For me, the standout thing with Jaws is Robert Shaw. I think he's amazing.
He's
such a great actor. And again, another one who's been in so many good films. He's in one of my all-time favourite films, which is The Sting with Paul Newman, Robert Redford. Again, 10 out of 10 for me, that film.
Right.
I think it's astounding. He also plays a Bond baddie, which is also brilliant. But yeah, wonderful actor. Great film. And again, obviously looking at that film with hindsight, you sort of read up about it. They actually had, as everyone knows, had loads of trouble with Bruce the shark.
Yeah.
And it didn't work how it was supposed to work. So they ended up cutting a lot of the shark scenes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it only made it better. They had to rely on actually it being suspenseful.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful film. And again, it still very much holds up today.
Totally.
I remember being a child and being at home, and it was when it was first shown on British television.
Okay.
And my granddad rang back home. He was at work and obviously he was sat in the canteen watching it, whatever. And he made sure I was in bed. So just like, make sure Adrian is not watching this.
Yep.
Um,
never going in the sea again.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't particularly do deep sea anyway. I'm not a massive fan of it.
No.
And I yeah, Jaws doesn't help at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, brilliant film. Really holds up today. It still seems as fresh now as it ever was.
Mm.
And yeah, for me, Robert Shaw is the highlight of all of it. I think he's wonderful in it.
Cool.
And the whole scene where they're drunk around the table and talking is, well, it's one of the all time iconic scenes in any film.
I think it's totally.
If you've seen it, that's one of the things that sticks with you.
Yep. God forbid they ever do a remake of that.
No, I don't know.
Okay, so
CGI shot.
Yeah, exactly. So coming up after the break then, we're going to go into Jaws in detail. And welcome back. So this is part two, or the final part of our 70s show. Not going to be the last 70s film we talk about, is it? Because there's going to be loads in the 10 club,
yeah.
That we're doing. But this is kind of our final pick for tonight. And it's Ridley Scott's Alien from 1979.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing film. We watched it just the other day, didn't we? Did you watch it last night?
Night before.
I just wanted to explain why Alien was in the 70s. Originally, we couldn't agree on it being in the 10 Club. The reason being was that I believe that aliens have returned, personally. And from previous watching of Alien, I'd given it 9.9+. And because we both couldn't agree, we wanted to do the film, so we decided to put it in this section.
Right, okay.
There might be a little reveal at the end of this.
Spoiler
alert.
Yeah.
But, so that's why we picked it.
Mm. So the synopsis of the film is basically like a crew on a spaceship get prematurely awakened from their like hypersleep because they intercept, so the computer has been programmed, if it intercepts a message, to wake everybody up early to kind of investigate because they're kind of looking for extraterrestrial life. So they all get awoken what they think is basically like a distress signal, isn't it, from another ship. So they go and investigate. There are no survivors on this ship, but there is something on the ship in the guise of the famous egg that gives birth to the facehugger. And the film kind of goes from there. It's really slow burn, this film, isn't it? And if this film was made today, they would show you like an opening gambit of somebody else being attacked by an alien to pique your interest. Then the credits would roll and then you'd get a half an hour, 45 minute build up, wouldn't you? But this film, it doesn't do that and it doesn't need to do that. It just does an incredibly slow build and you don't really know what's going on at all. It really takes you on that journey, doesn't it?
Mm.
And builds the suspense, I think, so well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did you see this film pretty early on?
Yeah. Again, I saw Aliens first and the second one.
I think I did.
Yeah.
Mm.
And again, that would be certainly a 9+ or 10 for me, the second one.
It's
a wonderful film.
Yeah.
But again, the first one, looking at it now, the thing I found interesting sort of rewatching it for this is when it came out, it must have looked so futuristic.
You
know, all the sort of the props and the set and the miniatures are fantastic and must have looked so futuristic to a late 70s audience.
Yeah.
But the thing I find now looking at it is because to us it looks dated, I think it adds a little bit of an extra edge to it because of it ages the people in the film.
Mm.
Because to us it looks like it's very dated and it seems like you've got lots of plastic things stuck to wall and painted grey. I think now looking at it, as you know, in modern times, I think that ages it a little bit more. Mm. So it actually,
authentic.
So it, it makes it more authentic. Yeah. It makes it look like that spaceship has been out there for a very long time.
Yeah.
And you've got an actual age rather than it looking futuristic. Mm. It looks like, again, it could be at any sort of point in history.
And yeah, now you think you're watching almost a historic film of them discovering aliens. Whilst at the time, obviously, it was futuristic, and now it almost looks like a history piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I think that sort of, as I say, gives it an extra sort of lilt to it, and it makes the story, well, it doesn't change the story, but it certainly makes you look at it in a different way. Yeah, it is certainly a slow builder, but then what a shocker when it actually comes.
Yeah.
It's totally. A very, very iconic scene in the canteen.
Mm. I mean, the facehugger thing, I think, is brilliant because that's such a fucking horrendous creature.
Yeah, awful.
Isn't it? Yeah. Clamping onto this guy's face. I mean, the special effects are brilliant. Obviously, it's all practical. Like you said, everything's done on miniatures when it's the spaceship. And I think it looks fantastic. I know James Cameron's a big fan of miniatures. He used them a lot in Terminator as well. And The Abyss, I think. But just that thing where you see it tightening on his neck whenever they try and even touch that thing. And apparently, the story behind the acid blood was that the producers of the film basically said, why wouldn't they just shoot that alien? There's no reason, like, it's not realistic. If an alien came on the ship that was basically man-size, and they've got the firepower they've got, you'd just shoot it.
Of course. Yeah.
So they came up with the concept of, well, you can't because it bleeds acid.
Genius.
So it's fucking genius. Yeah, I mean, it's just it was a really simple problem that they had, and the solution, I think, is one of the most iconic.
That makes it terrifying, all the more terrifying.
How do you fight that? I mean, I think it's like a futuristic kind of laser cutter, because they decide, right, just cut it above the knuckle. We're just going to cut these little arms off. And this blood goes through about three floors of the ship, which are, you know, solid metal.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the first inkling that you get, because you don't know what this thing is at this point. But when you see the acid blood, it's almost like, oh shit.
Ultimate safety mechanism. Really.
Yeah. And then, like you say, the really iconic scene all sitting around the dinner table. And apparently this was shot with four different cameras, but they did it in one take. And the first time the alien bursts out of his chest is the first any of the actors knew about that. So the reactions on the people's faces is totally real. One take, four different cameras, so it could capture everyone. Yeah, and like you say, that's amazing. The little woman, you said it looks cute, even, doesn't it? The little alien.
What did I say? It looks like an angry yellow penis. Yeah. with a mouth.
Well, a lot of it's very phallic, isn't it? The Giga artwork is quite disgusting, some of it.
I think it's cute when it runs off. But at that point, it is tiny. It's not very cute within the next half an hour.
It grows quite quickly as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm a bit mystified by how fast it grows. I've got a few questions about that. They'll never be answered.
No. But it's just, I mean, I always think with the alien, I mean, they've kind of touched on this more in like the Prometheus and the Alien versus Predator and stuff. Is that alien different depending on the host? Like, because the egg is laid in a human host, it's a very humanistic, it's a humanoid alien, isn't it? It's got arms and legs like a human. Yeah. And I think if the egg was laid in a dog, would it be a more dog-like?
Well, you get that in three, don't you? In the prison.
And it is
which a lot of people don't like. I rate it
highly
as the first two. I think it's brilliant. There's some great actors in it. I like the premise. I like the story.
Yeah.
I think the only problem you've got with that is some of the special effects that special, compared to what they did with the first two films.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? How can you possibly go 10 years later and the effects be almost laughable? I mean, there's some CGI in that with the alien where the image surrounding the alien is a totally different colour palette to the film.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's been just stuck on, laid a piece of acetate.
Straight on top of it, yeah.
It's like...
The scene in where they're trying to chase it down the tunnels with the fire flares in the third one. It's a great scene, the alien comes out just into the light and then drags the body away.
Yeah.
And it just looks so fake. Yeah. It does look really, really bad.
Yeah. So the characters then in this first one, we've got a great cast of characters, really. Like, there's such a good variation of different people. Obviously, we get introduced to Ripley, who we don't know how badass Ripley is in the beginning, do we? That kind of develops as the film goes on, because nobody really wants to take charge once people start dying. She almost kind of steps up to the role, doesn't she? Because I think they're just like salvage operators, aren't they? Like the two guys are mainly pissed off because they are worried they're not going to get any money for
this.
That's
right, yeah.
And she basically says, look, the law states you do get an equal share. Whatever it is we find, you're entitled to. And that's all they're bothered about,
yeah,
is the money. They're pissed off because they're about to go home and now it's been interrupted.
Well, but they're just not equipped for this, are they?
No.
Really,
well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, you're not expecting to come across this sort of thing at all.
No.
But whoever's programmed the ship,
yeah,
is totally, well, wanting this to happen.
Well, it's a small print thing in, yeah, in the contract, isn't it? The fact that, you know, if they go out there and they find something, then they have to go.
They just didn't think that was ever going to happen.
No.
I'm sure they're signing the contract thinking, yeah, I'll sign that, but that's not going to, as if we're going to come across anything. But, you know, you find out later on that the plan is in place, really, all along. You know, they've planted the android on board. Because he's part of it, isn't he? He's from the Whaling Corporation, and he's a right arsehole, you know. And
you know there's something wrong. He plays that part really well, actually, because there is something wrong when you realise very robotic about him and emotionless.
Well, one thing I noticed rewatching it is the fact that he is right from the outset. As I say, when they're all sat around the table at the beginning after they've all woken up, he's sort of barking orders and pushing people in certain directions from the start.
Yeah.
It's only re-watching that I've actually noticed that. He is sort of planted in there from the beginning, and he's obviously aware of what the plans are and, you know, what the rules that Mother has sent him are, and that, you know, the crew are expendable, and the most important thing is making sure they get a sample to take back with them.
Yep, and even if that's in the host of a person, so be it.
So you've got everyone being manipulated in the background.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, once the chestburster thing happens, the film then kind of turns into almost like a slasher movie, doesn't it, with the alien being the villain and people just getting picked off.
So you can stalk.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
You know, divide and conquer. They split up and they get, you know, picked off one by one. And the poor cat goes through the mill. Yeah. I was reading. Basically, what they do is have the cat, put a screen in front of the cat, put an Alsatian behind the screen, and then lift the screen.
Oh.
Holding it back.
Oh, pussy.
But the reaction from the cat to the alien is the big fucking Alsatian barking. But that's really, it's kind of good because you don't.
No wonder the cat's scratching.
Well, you kind of see the cat's reaction, don't you? Before you properly get to see the alien, you just get to see kind of bits and bobs of the alien. It's not kind of until the end that you get to see the whole thing.
No.
But yeah, it's just this whole tension build in this movie. Like, it's a 2-hour film, a bit like The Omen, and it doesn't drag. Even though there's a lot less going on than in The Omen.
But the bits that film the tension are the really cool bits of getting like the feel for the movie.
Yeah, the character development.
Yeah, and the development.
Mm.
I noticed that much more this time. That bit that had always knocked that point off for me I was maybe slightly bored around the beginning. But this time I had a new appreciation for that.
The section where they actually go into the ship and John Hurt gets down towards the eggs. And obviously, as soon as you do see the eggs, it's just like, oh wow, what is this?
Mystery,
and
sort of,
leading up to that, it seems to drag out a little bit.
Yeah.
But I do get what you're saying. You can kind of appreciate a little bit more with a bit of hindsight that it is just setting the suspense up, and it is done very, very well.
Yeah.
I think it's just the more films I'm watching now, we're doing the podcast from all different eras and appreciation of the silent parts.
Yeah,
the more shit we watch, the more fantastic these films that we think are great become.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like,
but yeah, that egg scene, because you can see that weird little thing moving around in the egg and you don't know what it is, and you don't really get to see what it is, do you? You just see it like briefly jump there.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. You don't see him until they take the helmet off when he's back in the ship.
Yeah, he's just there.
Yeah.
And obviously they're going to freeze him. We get the chest burst. So now we're back to the slasher part.
Yeah.
Where we get glimpses of what the alien really is up to.
That's right. It releases itself, doesn't it? It disappears. Does. And they all get called back in. And John Hurt sat up smiling and laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I feel great. Obviously, not for too long.
Yeah, not for long.
I think he just had the dream, didn't he, of smothered.
That's right. Yeah.
But Obviously, your criticism is why does that alien grow so quickly?
It's not a criticism. It's
no,
just
it's just a question because they don't address it, do they?
I guess it's just it's not feeding. So I, but it's got acids for blood, man. So this is sci-fi, so...
Yeah.
I suppose that's something that, that runs through all of the films.
It
I mean,
does.
What does it feed on? Because
it doesn't eat.
It doesn't
it?
Eat. So.
Really.
Mm.
And I don't really know what its purpose is because the purpose of the facehugger is
that's
to plant the egg.
That's a human thing eating anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's an earthy thing.
But like, you know, I think that's probably what's scary about the alien because it hasn't really got an agenda. It just wants. It just fucking kills.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is really all.
Reproduce and kill, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it because. I don't think the alien reproduces from itself, does it? It's the facehuggers that create the aliens. I don't really know. You know, if you were really breaking it down from like an evolutionary standpoint, I don't know what the role of the alien actually is, really.
No, it's kind of like a
soldier,
drone, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you get the specific queen aliens that do the laying.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, the rest of them appear to be just sort of like...
They're all ants. Grabbing, building.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Look, I think a worker ant hasn't even got sex organs, has it? It's just literally... It's a doer.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the alien
that's
is.
What the aliens are.
It's just clearing shit out. And yeah, you don't get to see the queen until the sequel.
That's right.
But that's a fucking amazing.
It's an amazing
Jesus.
Beast,
yeah. Right? That's so well designed and yeah, just a terrifying concept that this thing is just laying these eggs.
It's terrifying enough to see the alien as is. Well,
yeah.
You know, you get the face hugger, which is gruesome. Mm. You get then see the alien, which again is terrifying.
Yeah.
And then in the sequel, you see that huge, huge queen, which is so much bigger than the rest of the aliens as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful concept as well.
Mm.
And... Yeah, and with the simplicity of the title as well. A funny thing I read about the sequel. Apparently, when he was pitching the second film, he walked into the room because they really weren't up for giving him any money at all.
Okay.
And he walked in the room, walked up to the whiteboard, wrote Alien, wrote an S at the end, and turned the S into a dollar sign.
Okay.
And that afternoon, they gave him £80 million to make a new film.
Right.
Or $80 million to make a new film. So
okay.
Yeah, just look. This is going to happen.
Mm.
It will follow on. There's enough story there to do it. And threw money at him, basically.
I mean, that's one of the rare occasions when the sequel is just as good. I mean, some people would argue better. I don't think it's a better horror film. But, I mean, it's one of the rare times when there is more to tell with that story, isn't there? Because it is just one alien.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're giving us kind of multiple aliens in the second one is just like, fucking hell, I mean, one was terrifying. One wiped out an entire crew. What's 20 going to do?
Absolutely.
You know, and you want to see that, and we do get to see it, which is great. It's one of them rare things where the sequel does what it says on it, does what people want it to do.
Yeah, so
it
lives up to the hype.
Yeah, you want to see more aliens, and that's exactly what you get.
And it earned a shitload of dollars.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, totally. So then people just get picked off one by one.
And then obviously we've got the revealing of the android when he goes fucking nuts as well, and that's a scary scene.
Mm. That's right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he realises that Ripley is going to stop this mission.
He's bashing her about and trying to ram a freaking magazine into a golf.
That's right, yeah, which is...
And just battering off people that are coming near him. It's just the power of
that's
him.
That's the strength of him. That's
yeah,
a scary
it just
thing
creates
him,
another, quite a distraction, actually. This is a scary moment as well.
Mm.
To realise this guy is pissing out white shit and his head's knocked off, but he's still going.
He's still going.
Yeah.
And realising you've been completely duped as well.
Well, that's the thing. She like barges past him in a rage and notices she obviously cuts him or something, and she just sees like the bead of like strange white running down his head. Which is, I think, as the viewer, it's the first time you know that he's an android.
Yeah.
I think that. I think you find out.
Then you go, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I think you find out when Ripley finds out, don't you?
You do, yeah.
Yeah, but there's, like you say, looking back when you watch the film again, there's something not quite right about him. He's got an agenda. He's either a total arsehole or he's got an agenda. There's something, you know, he's not a team player, this guy.
Well, you think he's there to stir up shit, but you just don't realise that he's an android.
Yeah, you don't realise how he's doing it either, do you? He sort of keeps himself to himself quite a lot through it.
Yeah.
But the scenes where he does actually... respond and relate to the other characters, and say, looking back at it and watching it again, you do see that he's quite focused on doing something.
He does weird thing where he does like a little dance where he like G's himself
that's
up.
Right, yeah.
And I think, what's that about if he's an android? Like,
maybe he's just firing up his synapses. Like,
yeah,
his,
could be, yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
But when they plug him in, obviously, when they kill him, and then like, there's that moment where he's just got no empathy for them all and stuff.
Well, they say, how do we kill it? And he says, you can't.
You can't, yeah. That's it.
He fucked.
Yeah.
Basically.
Played really well that part as well.
Yeah, he's a great actor. You know,
he has to move the body so the head's she has to make sure it's
stuck down. So
again, another good cast, some really good casting. Yaphet Kotto is obviously amazing, and as we spoke about earlier, just Bond for me. You can never watch. Yeah. You can never watch anything without thinking of Bond. It's got Yaphet Kotto in it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Is it Harry Dean Stanton as well? He's wonderful. Mm. And he plays the part really, really well.
Yeah, John Hurt. We were saying the other woman is... what did you say she was from?
She's that crazy woman in Which is a Peacewick.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
she is.
She's the mum as well in Flight of the Navigator.
Oh, crikey, yeah. That's a film I've seen for a long time.
Yeah, that's a great film, that.
Like her fear when the alien comes to her
and stuff. So obviously Ripley, when she kind of steps up to the plate, and this is something that James Cameron does really well, is really strong female characters. Mm. Obviously you've got Sarah Connor, there's some really strong females in The Abyss. An Alien is kind of the first one because she's totally badass, and you don't see just how badass until the sequel, but he's setting it up. I mean, this is someone that, although she's panicking, because she actually, like, she kind of flips out when she realises that the crew are now expendable, like you would.
Mm-hmm.
That's just sheer panic. Mm. And I think a lot of female characters would be written as they crumble and go to pieces at that point, and the man has to step up and save the day.
Yeah.
And you would really notice this in the video nasties as well, the patheticness of the women.
Oh, right, God, yeah. Right. Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, she was one of the major...
And
initially she sort of stands up and takes over and makes the difficult calls.
Yeah, because no one else wants to do it.
But gets ignored. Mm. You know, it's like, no, you can't let them in. We've got quarantine procedures in place for a reason.
Yeah.
And again, it's Ash who ends up opening the door and overriding her.
Mm. The other one gives her a slap in the director's cut.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and apparently Ridley Scott, off away from Sigourney Weaver, went, look, this looks rubbish, you've got to really hit her. And she really gives her a belting, and Sigourney Weaver's reaction to being hit and the other cast members is totally genuine because they didn't know she was going to probably belt her.
Okay.
But that's the only difference, because I deliberately didn't watch the director's cut because I thought it would run too long, because the Aliens director's cut is about 17 minutes longer. The Alien director's cut is about another minute.
Right, okay.
It's not a lot. We could have watched it, and it's basically her slapping Sigourney Weaver for not letting them in.
Right, yeah.
And then there's another brief scene, I think, where somebody discovers something.
I noticed a little bit of extra special effects, because I watched the director's cut.
Oh, did you?
I watched it.
Okay.
And I think not a great deal, because I know in the second film, the whole thing with the mobile sentries, that's all added in, isn't it? The automatic guns in the tunnels.
Right.
That's extended in the extended version.
Yeah, and there's a good bit of character development actually in number two, where it shows that Ripley used to have a daughter.
That's right.
Because she's been in like hypersleep for so long. And I think that strengthens the bond between her and Newt later on, because it's almost like that's another daughter for her.
Yeah.
I think the director's cut is actually a better version in Aliens. It makes the film about 2.5 hours. But I do think it's worth it. Back to Alien.
So she starts to activate the bomb and the destruction.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, which is great. I mean, I really like that. It's a really elaborate system where she has to screw those things in and pull each one out, which I suppose you'd need because you don't want to accidentally
set it. It's not just a big red button.
Yeah, you don't want to accidentally set it off, do you?
Again, it's a bit realistic, I'd say, especially for the time it was made.
Yeah. And quick note on the Blu-ray, if you listen to this in surround sound, it sounds fucking amazing when she starts the self-destruct sequence, because all that noise that you can hear in the ship is coming through all four speakers.
Isn't that that sounds nice?
Yeah, but I'm just going to throw that in here.
All now.
Yeah, because it sounds phenomenal. And I think the tension up to that point, because she actually tries to switch it off. She's like...
Well, that's because she goes to the getaway and the alien is there. Basically, she looks around the corner and realises she's trapped.
Mm.
So then she goes back to try and deactivate it.
Well, allowed to.
And that's when she leaves the cat box there.
Yeah.
And then obviously then she can't deactivate it.
Mm.
Then she knows she's got to go and try and get past this alien.
Yeah.
And that's when we see Ripley pretty much pick up the first, you know, weapon for the first time, which becomes a trademark, really, isn't it? The second one.
Yeah, yeah.
She's all about weapons in that one.
So she gets into the escape pod, thinking she's all safe, and the alien is actually asleep, isn't it, escape pod with her. And it's great because it does that thing.
I think it's important. I just want to say here that I felt like even just up to that point, that film could have ended there and you'd still be like, oh, fucking hell. That was hot, you know, when the explosion happens.
Yeah.
I felt like really like drained. And then I knew, I thought, fuck, she's still in there. Mm. And I thought, just one more thing to say is that a sign of a good film is I know she gets away and everything's all right, but I was still bobbing it for her.
Yeah.
We'll say that. You know, if you watch a film and you're still worried.
That particular scene where she realises the alien is there, the alien doesn't realise that she's there. And she's backing into the sort of storage cupboard and then sort of slips herself into this. But I think that's amazing. It's done really,
detention
really well.
For that is incredible. Yeah.
It's going to get in the suit.
Yeah, because it does that thing, right? When I watch Rambo First Blood and Rambo is hiding in the mud and then his face just comes out, I kind of miss it. I think it's either that or it's when he's like bent over covered in leaves and he just appears in the scene and he's in the scene the whole time, but he's so well camouflaged you don't see him until he moves. And I think that alien, even though you kind of know what it looks like at that point, it's so frozen and kind of blends in with the ship. It's not until it moves, it's almost like a really good jump scare.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like, is that the... Yeah, fucking hell, it is. It's apparently, it's made out of, like, Rolls-Royce parts.
Oh, right, okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like, just car parts. And it probably looks like...
I know the guy who's inside the suit was an absolute beast, wasn't he? Like, 7-odd feet.
7 foot tall with really skinny arms. And they said, that's exactly, that's exactly what we need. Because, I mean... I absolutely love practical special effects and hate CGI with a passion. I mean, I appreciate something like Prometheus or The Avengers would not be a film without the CGI. Yeah. So it's got its place, and like Terminator 2, and so like it's got its place in films. But the alien, my only slight criticism is that it does look like a man in a suit.
Right,
and I know that it is meant to be humanoid. But I just think there's some bits where its hands are a bit too rigid and you just like you don't see the forearms move. I'm not docking a point off the film for that because that would be done like we talked about Alien 3 is fucking horrendous, the CGI in
it
that.
It still doesn't take, but the fact it's exciting.
It's still a great film.
And apparently because they knew it was a man in a suit, they deliberately did very close zooms and they also filmed it from certain angles to try and not make it look like a man in a suit. I just think there's some scenes that are unavoidable, like at the end.
I suppose when it gets off the ledge, it's very human, the way it all kind of does that.
And when she like harpoons it, and then it comes back towards the ship door, it's very like human, rigid.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which is my only criticism, but it's not going to take away anything from
it's
the
half
film.
Human, so.
But it is half human, so and for 1979, I think the effects are brilliant. And for me, that alien in that man in a suit is far more convincing than the aliens in Alien 3, and the ones in Resurrection as well, which are obviously CGI a lot of them, when they're swimming like a fucking dolphin.
Yeah, awful.
Come on.
Oh, I hate that film. It really did upset me.
Yeah, we sat through them, didn't we?
I mean, I don't hate it. There's an action bit of me that still enjoys some of it, but I do appreciate that it's not...
I just thought it was a little bit too Hollywood. I mean, I know... I suppose you could say that the second one is quite a Hollywood blockbuster film.
But you would
say that was one of the forerunners of that sort of formula for that kind of film. But the fourth one I just found, well, there's very rarely any need for Winona Ryder. certainly in that film, I just thought it was a character that really didn't need to be in there.
Yeah.
And they could have done so much better with it because the premise of... they've taken her DNA and they're doing all these tests and that. I get that. I can see how it wasn't too much of a stretch for that to be an extra film.
Yeah.
But then I thought the sort of the final boss at the end, I just thought was awful.
I hated it.
Awful.
The Ripley alien kind of fusion. It's the first when I watched that with you, it was the first time I'd seen that because I turned Alien Resurrection off.
I end up going, look how cute it is. It looks like her. So you're not meant to think that about a boss.
No.
There's nothing scary if you're going, oh, look, it's a bit cute with it.
Not when you've had, you know, as you say, we spoke about the big queen in the second one, which is so sort of gruesome. And
yeah, it just could have been done a lot better.
Yeah.
I think the guilty pleasure part of me would watch it in there on the surround big TV, but I would never download sure we will. And watch it upstairs.
I think we will.
And I would always pick the other ones.
Yeah. I mean, there's talk of them doing another one, isn't there? And apparently Weaver's on board for it as well.
Well, they're missing out the third and fourth.
They're ignoring three and four.
Straight from number two, which is a thing they're starting to do in Hollywood. They're, you know, ignoring films when it suits.
Yeah.
And I haven't got a problem with that.
Well, I just think it's a shame because I like the third one so much.
Yeah, apparently he's working with Ridley Scott on Prometheus 2, so their stories don't overlap.
Okay.
And Blomkamp has to change one part of his story already, he said.
Well, you don't need both. Either do Prometheus 2 or do a new Alien film. I don't think we need both.
No.
Cash in.
I know why they're doing it, but...
But I don't know if I could get enough of Alien. But we even watched Alien vs Predator, both of them, the other day, and just...
Do you know what?
The first one, I think, if that was an 18 film, would be a perfectly good film.
Mm. Yeah,
the story is decent enough. You've got some half decent characters in it. It's great to see Lance Henriksen back in. I think he's wonderful. And yeah, with the exception again of the MTV, we're all friends at the end.
I just love
ending.
The alien. I love seeing it.
But it's a decent enough film, but they marketed it at kids. If it was a scary film.
And the second one, they forget all about the acid blood.
The second one's just
what
awful.
Is going on with
they
that?
Do. They awful, the awful. Acid blood thing's gone. Yeah, there is no acid blood in that.
You can't forget one of the scariest parts of the alien.
I was so looking forward to seeing the alien hybrid predator. I thought that could be the best movie beast ever. And it was just fucking atrocious.
They allude to it at the end.
The only
Prometheus
good part about the second
they?
Is that predator is pretty badass in the second one.
Do you know what? That's the best thing about that film. He's a fucking because they're all trained killers, and that's what they do. But this guy
is
like the fucking boss. He's the bounty hunter for the aliens. Yeah. For the Predators, and you think, fucking hell, like, this guy must have a serious kill list. Do you know what I mean?
To be promoted
to that level within the hierarchy, that he's the one that they send to sort shit out. And you think, yeah, that's fucking badass and great. But like I say, they forget about the blood, the acid blood. Yeah. And you think, did you forget? Like, that's so significant. Like,
people are shooting, there's like, it's going everywhere, and like, people are fine.
No,
I'm bothered, and yet you think to that first one where we've just said, like, cutting one finger on a tiny thing went through.
Nearly breaches the hull.
And that's all you see of it in the film as well.
Yeah.
There's nothing else of it, it's just that section.
Yeah, it's not until the second one that the acid blood thing really comes into play. So to completely write it off, what are you doing? Prometheus, what do you think to that?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Wasn't as good as I was expecting it to be. But yeah, it's again. I just think a little bit heavy-handed on some of the CGI. I've only seen it once. I watched it not long after it came to DVD.
Mm. You know when the thing starts to go berserk and just properly fuck people up. No, I wanted more of that.
Yeah.
And that's almost... I mean, they'll probably give us that in the sequel. I don't know what they're going to do in the sequel because obviously we get the hybrid alien thing.
Mm.
You know, where it pops out.
Tussle at the end of...
So we'll see. I mean, like I say, I'm on board with the new Alien because that Neil Blomkamp's doing it, and I think District 9 was a phenomenal film.
That is a great film.
And if Sigourney Weaver's on board and Michael Biehn's on board, and I don't know if Lance Henriksen's a bit old, but you know, if we can get Bishop back as well, then
Filoni can come back for the new team. You know, Lance can come back as an older Bishop. I don't see why not.
Yeah, have you seen the trailer for Terminator Genesis?
No, I haven't.
It actually looks good.
Really?
Yeah. But so did number three.
And that was the worst.
I still haven't watched it.
Don't bother.
It's horrendous.
It's my hated movie.
Terminator Salvation's pretty good. If you just look at it as standalone, purely because, and a lot of people didn't like it, but because I'm such a fan of the first ones, there's so many little nods to the first one, like him playing Guns N' Roses on his stereo to attract, like basically puts his ghetto blaster playing that song to like get the attention of these things. And right towards the end of the film, I thought they've fucked up here because they've not put the scar on John Connor's face that he's got when they do the flashback.
Yeah.
And then right near the end of the film, he has a fight with the Terminator and it basically grazes down his face and causes the scar. And I was like, oh, they've even done it. So almost like for the fans, I thought, oh, I appreciated that. And it is a pretty good film. It's nowhere near a comparison to one and two.
No.
But as a standalone film, you don't really even... You could just watch
it.
It
came out that year, perhaps. It was...
Yeah, I think it's good. They did the little thing where they put Arnie's face on, like, you know, a duplicate body of him. Apparently, there's a guy called, like, Roland Kickinger, I think his name is. And basically, he's identical body-wise to Arnie. So right, they used his body... And then they superimpose Arnie's young face from Terminator 1 onto him.
Right, okay.
And then quite quickly his face gets burnt off. So we're just left with the body. So but again, it's a nice, you know, it's a nice little nod for the fans. You know, he's fighting Arnie again and all that kind of thing. So it's worth watching. And the new one does look all right. But I'm just too... But it's weird because
they remade a lot of the scenes from the first and second into the new film. So again, I don't see the point.
The scenes from the first one, so they've got Michael Biehn landing, going into the shop and like trying the trainers on, nicking the jacket.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And they're doing that scene, and then they've got Arnie fighting the 1981 version of himself as the Terminator, but he's the older one fighting the younger version of him. Like, really fucking weird.
What happened to an old Terminator?
He's aging because his skin's real, so that ages, apparently. That's how they've written that into
them. Whatever.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I thought. I thought, like, his body in Terminator 1, he's just fucking, like, pretty, like, Greek kind of, you know, imagine him being a statue. And I thought, I don't care how many steroids he takes, he will not be able to replicate that body. No. So what they've done is just written the fact that he's aged into the story, which is kind of, you know, fair enough. Like,
you've got to do something with it.
He's a grey-haired Terminator. Fighting the original, so it's weird what they're doing with it. It's, I mean, the cast looks good. It's got the woman from Game of Thrones.
Lena Headey.
It's the one that plays like the
Emilia Clarke.
Oh right, yeah. Daenerys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's got the guy that's in. He's kind of like the goody in the new Planet of the Apes film. He's quite an interesting. I think he's a really interesting actor.
The guy with curly hair. Yeah.
So he's John Connor, I think, from what I've seen in the trailer. I don't know for sure, but it looks like he's John Connor. So we'll see.
Back to
Alien.
Yeah.
Should we go for an individual conclusion on the film?
Yep.
Like, do you want go for a score and then like just
a score?
How you feel about it and stuff?
Yeah, great film. Wonderful to watch it back. And as I say, for me, gave it a little bit of an extra twist, sort of knowing what I know now and looking at it again for review. I would mark a 9. I think it's a great film. I would put the second film in the 10 club along with you guys. But yeah, the first film still holds up. So even after getting on for 40 years, it's a wonderful film. The effects mostly are fantastic, and for a film in the late 70s, there's not too many you can say that for that still hold up today.
So
wonderful. 9 points for me.
Okay, well, this was my pick for the 10 club, so it's getting a 10 from me. Obviously Rachel didn't agree that this was a 10, so it didn't make the 10 club. I think it's amazing. I love the second film, and that's probably a 10 for me as well, but I don't see it as much of a horror film. I think as a horror film, this is the far superior film. And yeah, it's almost like the perfect movie for me. Probably when I was a bit younger, when I watched this, Aliens was my favourite because it's action packed. But for me, I think the older I get, the more I appreciate suspense, good characters, character development, really subtle like special effects. The more CGI I'm being shown on the telly, the more I fight away from that and just appreciate the hell out of practical, real, tangible things. Miniatures, men in suits, even though it does look a little bit ropey, I will take that any day over a crappy CGI alien. So for me, it's a 10.
Yeah, I changed my mind and gave it a 10 watching it the other night. And one of the reasons for that is because watching it, I got a similar feel to it of how I felt watching John Carpenter's A Thing, which was our first 10 club. There was just something about the film that gave me, can't put a finger on it, but I thought, I feel like this is how I feel about The Thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, I had a bit more appreciation for those gaps this time round. And then at the end, that genuine stalking and the fact that I was scared that she wasn't going to get away, even though I know she did.
Yeah.
We always said that's a sign of almost a 10 if you still fear for the character's life, even though you know the outcome.
You know what it ended.
So that's why I changed my mind. So, we said we obviously would never do it again.
No, we're not going to review it twice.
I think maybe, like, as now, I look at it, it's still a 99 plus, but for its time, I'll give it a 10.
Yep. Awesome.
And just because, I noticed that the thing about it.
Yeah. Gave you the same feeling. It's a similar film, really. Well, the isolation.
The isolation, the stalking and stuff like that, and the use of guns and set and stuff did remind me of the thing a bit.
Mm. I think it's a lost art, to be honest, that kind of filmmaking. I know, like, it's easy to reminisce and stuff, but they literally don't. I know it's a cliche thing to say, but they do not make films like this anymore. Films like this don't come out where passion is the main driving force behind the film. You'll see it in a film like The Raid 2, because Gareth Evans, he's so passionate about these films. He's not doing it for the money, and you can tell when you watch the film and when you watch the interviews with this guy. His number one priority is creating a masterpiece of a film that he wants people to enjoy. And I think Ridley Scott did that with Alien. John Carpenter did that with The Thing. Of course, they're making shitloads of money off of it, but I genuinely don't think that's their number one priority. Whereas these days, it's all about the money. Isn't it? Sequels get green lit the weekend that the new one comes out, based on the revenue it takes in its opening weekend, with no script, no director, no writers, not even a concept for a sequel. It's out next year.
We're going to do one,
and that's why I think this is a totally it's a lost art, making films like this.
And also with the 10 thing, I kept thinking, well, if Aliens is a 10 and this isn't quite. I thought it doesn't have to be.
It can both be a 10, can't
it? It can be perfect in a different way.
Yeah.
I just challenged my own way of thinking a bit.
Yeah, because if you can take a film like that and look at it and say, well, I can see the flaws in it. I can see this is perhaps not as polished as it should be, but that film still gives you that feeling of wanting to mark it a 10. Then it's certainly got something to it.
I feel the same about Terminator 1 and Terminator 2. And even though I would always think Set 2 is like a 10 plus, it's one of my favourite films of all time, but I still, when I watch 1 now, I think that's worthy of it.
Do you know what? Yeah. They're so similar, I think. Alien 1 and Terminator 1, and then Terminator 2 and Aliens. One's a really kind of slow burn, almost like a slasher. You know, you've got the one singular villain who's kind of going, working through killing people to, for whatever its main goal is. And then the second one's a bit of an action fest. So whatever you're in the mood for, if you're in the mood for a really kind of slow burn, kind of horror film with lots of tension, you go for the first one. And if you're going for an all kind of balls to the wall action movie that's just amazing from start to finish, you've got the second one. So, you can't really go wrong with either of those two films.
So, it's like two of the best duos, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go for that.
Awesome. Okay.
Yay.
Brilliant. So, coming up after the break,
Adrian's leaving, so I'll just say thanks.
I was just going to close out the show with Adrian on it.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't want to just let you
off. So, we're just going to go for a quick break and we will be back.
Looking for something to fill that deep, horrible, dirty void inside, then look no further than the podcast Under the Stairs. Join your host Duncan McLeish and guests as they dissect horror films old and new. No film is too gory, no film is too scary, no film is too violent for the podcast Under the Stairs. The podcast Under the Stairs can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com or on iTunes. The podcast Under the Stairs is a proud member of the League of Extraordinary Podcasts. To avoid fainting, keep repeating to yourself, it's only a podcast, it's only a podcast, it's only a podcast.
So welcome back.
Welcome back.
So this closing is the, just closing out the show now. I hope you've enjoyed it. This is the end of our 70s thing, but like we say, there's going to be a lot more 70s films coming up.
Yeah, it may be back.
Yeah, it will be back, definitely, because a lot of the films that we're going to talk about from the 70s are a 10, so that's probably coming next. We don't really know what we're doing next episode, do we?
No, but we'll think of
We'll think of something by the time it comes round. So big thanks to Adrian for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
It's been wonderful. For coming back again in the future.
Yeah, definitely. We'll think of some kind of themed show.
Yeah.
We'll,
if you have any ideas, let us know.
Yeah,
because we're just winging it.
Excellent, we're just doing it because we enjoy it.
Yeah, so if you can think of any kind of interesting topic that you'd like to cover, we're more than happy to go with that.
Yeah, fantastic.
Awesome.
A little look through my collection and see what I've got.
Yeah, brilliant.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so thanks for listening, listeners, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.